Housing takes another hit.
And investors continue to take a shine to silver and gold.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in for Steve Chiotakis.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for downloading the podcast from marketplace.org. It is Tuesday, April 26th.
Coming up, the housing market can't keep going down, can it? I have a secret, Jeremy. The answer, unfortunately, is yes.
Uh-oh. We'll find out the cost of all the tornadoes on homeowners and insurers.
And why Facebook is getting into the online coupon game. Is it something we should really like?
Those stories and more are just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This podcast is supported by FreshBooks, the easy professional online invoicing service made especially for small businesses. Learn more at FreshBooks.com.
Home prices continue to fall. The closely watched S&P Case-Shiller Housing Index said this morning that home prices in almost all the cities it follows fell in February. Many are now at their lowest levels since the housing market collapsed. Here to talk about this with us is economist Carl Case, who helped develop the index. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning.
We've heard that housing could be in a double dip, but with numbers like these, are we potentially even in a housing depression?
Not yet. I mean, I think that there is one aspect to it that is a depression. That's the amount of housing production that's taking place. It went below the 50-year low level. That's a depression for the housing sector. It's been down 30 months at low levels, and it's because the demand is not there. Household formation is dropped. In fact, the latest figures from the census say we're not growing households at all. It's not looking great.
A lot of the rest of the economy has been recovering and looking, you know, pretty robust. So why is it that housing continues to lag behind?
Well, it's because we had a massive excess. We built a couple of million more homes than we needed, given the number of households. We took prices in some cities and tripled them. $150,000 houses in 2000 became $450,000 houses by 2005. So we have a big hangover, and we're waking up in the morning, and it's going to take a while to burn it off.
Carl Case is the co-founder of the Case-Shiller Housing Prices Index. Carl, thank you.
Okay.
Well, if you're one of the many people in this country paying a mortgage that's worth more than your house, consider yourself lucky. At least your house is still standing and hasn't been swept up by a tornado. This month is likely to go down in the record books as the month with the most tornadoes. Julie Neiman is an analyst with Smith Moore & Company, and she joins us now, as always, from St. Louis. Good morning.
Morning, Jeremy.
Well, tell us what all these tornadoes mean for the insurance companies.
Well, if we hate bad weather, the property and casualty companies really hate it.
Yeah.
This perfect storm started in about 2008, and it was epic. Financial disasters, weather disasters. In the coastal areas, you've got hurricane, rain, mudslides. In the west, fire and drought. Central and east, windstorm, tornadoes, hail, flooding. Now the insurance companies make money by collecting premiums and investing in financial markets. Neither's working. You've got the premiums flat due to the recession, businesses closed, homeowners lost houses, investing, the worst bear market in modern history, interest rates near zero, and at the same time, claims are escalating. So you've got a profit crush going on here.
So what are the insurance companies to do?
Well, it's going to be merger for survival here. There's going to be less competition. That means we're going to see the next storm for consumers is going to be higher premiums, less coverage. Batten down the hatches.
And Julie, you're in St. Louis, which had quite a storm last Friday. Everything okay at the Neiman House?
Well, the last time we had this amount of flooding, it was build an ark, and I think everybody's getting it out again.
Oh, boy. Julie Neiman, analyst with Smith Moore & Company, thanks so much.
You bet.
To Silicon Valley now, where if you're a daily deal site like Groupon or Living Social, there's some news you're not going to like this morning. Facebook is getting into the game. Starting today, Facebook users in several cities will be able to buy group discounts at local businesses through a new service called Facebook Deals. Marketplace's Eve Tro reports.
The deal might be a night of bowling with friends for half price, or a fancy family dinner for $200. It's like those other group discount sites, except you buy these deals directly from your Facebook page.
And it makes it more integrated with the Facebook experience.
Carl Howe is an analyst with the Yankee Group.
The result is it's going to be really hard to compete with Facebook deals if you're a Groupon or a Living Social.
AKA the current rulers of online deals. Facebook wants in on their business because, unlike some other online ventures, group coupons pay big. In fact, they pay twice. Businesses will pay Facebook to be featured, and when customers buy the deal, Facebook gets paid again. And the social networking giant will push users to pay with Facebook's own pay system. Deals marks the first time users can buy actual stuff with Facebook credits. And real-world gourmet meals cost a lot more than virtual farm animals. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
There's a report out this morning that shows a huge gap between the retirement benefits that states have promised to their workers and the money that's actually been set aside to pay for them. The Pew Center on the state says in total, states are more than $1 trillion short. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
We all have unpaid IOUs. Right now, I owe our bureau chief, John Dimsdale, $2. He knows I'm good for it. But if you're a state and you've promised pension and health care payments to millions of workers, things can get ugly. Susan Uran is managing director of the Pew Center on the States.
So the gap between the promises that states have made for their employees' retirement benefits and the money that's set aside to pay for them has worsened significantly in just one year.
That year, 2009, the height of the financial crisis, tax revenues withered, and so did states' investments. How did they dig themselves out? Pew Research Director Kil Ha.
29 states made changes in the last 3 years to their retirement plans by either increasing employee contributions or reducing benefits in some way.
Or state legislators can pass tough laws requiring their states to set aside enough money for all their obligations. So far, only 3 states have done that. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Ford Motor just posted a $2.5 billion first quarter profit. That's thanks in part to the success of its fuel-efficient models, and also consumers doing their best to copy the MTV show Pimp My Ride. Jeremy, you just bought a car, right?
Yeah, I did.
So did you, was it fully loaded? Did you get any extras?
Well, it was a used car, but I did it came with it's got a sunroof and the funny thing is it's got a 6 CD changer, but I think that's sort of like old school now to have a 6.
I know, I don't
Does
even know if I have
CDs.
Much less 6.
Exactly.
Well, all of those extras are helping Ford. Apparently, consumers like you, Jeremy, have paid roughly more than $250 more per car than we did last year.
Well, all the numbers are aftermarket specials at the numbers section of our website. It's marketplace.org.
This podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks. For small business owners, FreshBooks is the online invoicing service to help you track time and expenses, create and send invoices, and receive payments. Accounts are free to manage up to 3 clients. To learn more, visit FreshBooks.com.
The Federal Reserve meets today to talk monetary policy, as the Fed is expected to start scaling back some of the extraordinary measures it took during the financial crisis. Speculation over the meeting has pushed the dollar down this morning. Meanwhile, gold has been rising for weeks, and silver has also reached new record highs. Here to talk with us is Bob McKee, chief economist with Independent Strategy in London. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Bob, silver is up 52% this year. It's about $46 an ounce. It seems to have followed kind of the same trajectory that gold has. Is silver just the poor man's gold?
Well, it has been considered that in the past. There's a lot of cash out there that big banks and companies are holding. They're looking to find a better return, but also gold and silver are seen as a way of protecting the assets and cash that you've got from a decline in paper currencies, in particular the dollar.
One difference that I have noticed between silver and gold is that silver seems to be a lot more volatile. Yesterday, for example, it was sort of up and down 5%. At the same time, gold was holding very steady. Why is silver so volatile compared to gold?
Well, silver is a much more speculative market. I mean, gold has a traditional role, and it's seen generally as an asset that you could hold to protect you against political risk and war and other volatility in the world, and we've seen a lot of that recently. And therefore, it has a more stable basis to its price. Silver is much more volatile because it's smaller and because there's much more speculation going on in that market rather than in the gold market, which has those traditional advantages to keep it more stable.
Bob McKee is chief economist with Independent Strategy in London. Bob, thank you.
Thank you.
European leaders are meeting in Rome today to talk about immigration, a new wave of it that's hitting southern Europe because of all the upheaval in North Africa. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports now from southern Italy.
The Church of San Domenico on the edge of a sunlit piazza in the ancient hill town of Oria. This pretty scene draws tourists from all over Europe, but in recent weeks there's been an influx of less welcome visitors. Young Tunisian men brawl in the street. This only serves to deepen local hostility to the migrants. This man says they drink, they argue, they fight, they break bottles in the street. 25,000 Tunisians have arrived in Italy since January, when the Tunisian dictator Ben Ali was ousted. When he fell, his control over illegal migration collapsed. Mohamed Munaidi joined the exodus.
Maybe looking for a nice life, job, let's say house or something like this.
He's now one of hundreds of young Tunisians living in a temporary reception centre outside Oria. Fawzi Bouchetsky is another.
If I have work, I will help my family.
The fact that these young men are looking for work makes them even less popular here. There are a few jobs even for the locals. Not everyone, though, is hostile to the incomers.
Numero? 42.
Volunteers hand out shoes and clothes to the migrants. Organiser Giuseppe Vitali says Italians should be the first to sympathise with people seeking their fortune abroad.
We have a duty because we were migrants in the past. We went in the past in the United States and in Germany, above all.
Vitali hopes other wealthier parts of Italy and Europe will put out the welcome mat for the migrants. So far, there's little sign of that. In Oria, southern Italy, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Hundreds of people in central China are sick after eating pork tainted with illegal food additives. It's the latest in a recent spate of food scandals in China this year. Our own Rob Schmitz has more.
2 weeks ago, a Shanghai housewife discovered the pork she had bought contained so much bacteria that it glowed in the dark. This past weekend, the focus was on noodles in Guangdong containing ink and industrial dye. It seems like a new food scandal is now a weekly event in China. But guess what? It may be because the food in China is actually getting safer.
The greater awareness of these issues in some respect may actually indicate progress.
Lester Ross is an attorney in Beijing who studies food safety regulations in China.
Just in the last month or so, there have been more than half a dozen different directives to control baby formula and a variety of other things.
Wu Ming is an outspoken critic of China's food safety at Beijing University. She says China's enacted so many policies that enforcing them all has become a problem. Lester Ross says the market may prove to be the best enforcer. The companies at the heart of the tainted milk scandal a few years ago saw their shares collapse and two company officials were even executed. Plus, foreign milk brands, including American ones, saw an uptick in sales. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Russia's president spoke at the site of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster today, calling for new world safety rules for nuclear plants. Today marks the 25th anniversary of Chernobyl. Thousands of lives were lost and billions were spent on cleanup. But some researchers now say the economic and human toll is actually less than one might think. Dr. Burton Bennett of the UN's Chernobyl Forum joins us now. Good morning, Dr. Bennett.
Good morning.
Your report back in 2005 estimated that about 4,000 people will eventually die from the effects of Chernobyl, which actually struck me as a lot fewer than I would have thought.
Yes, there were a number of individuals who did receive very high radiation exposures, including workers who were on site during the night of the accident. But most of the people who were either evacuated from the area or continued to live in the contaminated regions received relatively low doses of radiation, levels that would not be expected to lead to serious and widespread public health consequences.
Well, it sounds like the physical problems caused by the radiation appear to be maybe less severe than we had thought. What about other kinds of trauma, psychological trauma, things like that?
Yes, that's certainly definitely a factor in this situation. The countermeasures taken soon after the accident were effective, the evacuations, the restrictions of agricultural products and so forth. But the people continue to live in a contaminated area, and it's an area that's economically depressed. There's an overall level of ill health, and there's constant worry about radiation and its effects. And all of these things are no doubt contributing to ill health in the population.
Do you think we'll see some of the same misperceptions and realities 25 years after the nuclear disaster that we're seeing now in Japan?
Surely we will. Radiation is not well understood, although we live in a sea of radiation from natural sources all around us, and we continue to be bombarded by cosmic rays, and there's natural levels of radionuclides in diet and in our bodies. It's always a little bit sensationalized in the media to bring attention to issues, but I don't think this is objective from what we know about radiation.
Right, there seems to be a big fear factor, yes. I think, a lot of times with radiation.
That's certainly the case, and that probably will always be so.
Dr. Burton Bennett was the chairman of the UN's Chernobyl Forum. Dr. Bennett, thank you.
Thank you.
So, Jeremy, here's something interesting. Huh. Books are getting in on the product placement game.
Hmm.
The Wall Street Journal reports for his upcoming travel memoir, author Harry Hurt got freebies from companies like camping gear maker Coleman and talked up the products in the narrative of the book. I know. I mean, you know, I'm all for capitalism, but I mean, you know, what's next? Like, what a piece of work is a Big Mac?
National average, Stacey, for a gallon of gasoline is now $3.86 a gallon, which to me actually sounds like a really good deal because it's a lot more in Los Angeles.
Well, as you know, you just got a car, right?
Exactly. Well, President Obama has been promising to look into whether there's fraud or manipulation going on in the oil markets that's driving prices higher. But both industry leaders and outside observers have started firing back, blaming the government for actually fueling the price run-up. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
Critics point out his Republican predecessor ordered the same kind of probe in 2005 and again in 2006 that Mr. Obama is promising now.
We're going to make sure that no one is taking advantage of the American people for their own short-term gain.
Twice, investigators found no conspiracy, and University of Maryland economist Peter Morici says there's no profiteering this time either.
The focus on fraud and speculation is scapegoating.
Morici says it's distracting from years of inconsistent energy policy, which has kept us vulnerable to oil shocks. Meantime, industry analyst Stephen Shork argues Obama is essentially blaming the messenger, investors who are signaling the risk of not having a clear energy strategy.
What the market would like to see is a coherent message.
Shork argues the Fed keeps flooding investors with cheap money and encouraging speculation, and low interest rates have weakened the greenback's purchasing power.
I don't even watch the oil market anymore. I watch the dollar. If the dollar's going in a certain direction, I'm confident oil is going in the opposite direction.
Address the monetary issues, and Shork says flatly, you will see oil prices lower. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Well, it seems now is the time to decide if you want the Republican nomination for president, Stacey. You may have heard that yesterday Mississippi's Governor Haley Barbour said he's not running. He's out of the game.
Yeah.
Texas Congressman Ron Paul says he's forming an exploratory committee, which means he may jump in. And then, of course, there's the guy who's getting most of the attention at the moment.
Oh, yes.
Real estate mogul Donald Trump. Well, reporter Anna Sale with WNYC's political website, itsafreecountry.org, has been looking into Trump's business background, and she joins us now with that story. Good morning.
Good morning.
So it seems like despite Donald Trump's fame, no one actually knows what he's really worth. Why is that?
First of all, the Trump Corporation is a private company, so they don't have to tell us how much he's worth. Mm. Also, real estate is part of it, and those values obviously fluctuate. And his name itself is a commodity, and you can see that it's on real estate towers and casinos, but it's also on bottled water and vitamins. And so we don't know how much he actually owns and how much he's just sold the use of his name.
So you're saying that those buildings with the Trump name on them, those aren't necessarily his buildings?
Right. The Trump name doesn't mean that he owns it. It doesn't mean that he's developed it. Sometimes he's just sold the use of his name. And this is something that's been a marker of his career all along. He's understood that the Trump name itself adds value. This is Gwenda Blair, a Trump biographer.
Very early on, he got branding. He was really quite prescient about that, how important it would be to make his name into something that would add value.
Now, that has gotten him into some trouble recently. There are actually two pending lawsuits for a project in Florida and a project in Baja, Mexico, where investors bought into a Trump project, thinking they were buying part of Trump's developing sort of mind. And then they found out later that he wasn't involved at all. He just sold the use of his name.
So it's all about the Trump name, the Trump brand.
The Trump brand, it's everywhere. It's on projects that he's involved with. It's on projects he's left. For example, the casino company in Atlantic City that runs the casinos, it's gone bankrupt 3 times, the last time after he left the board. So it's about the Trump brand for good or for bad.
Anna Sale, reporter with the website itsafreecountry.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And finally, to another familiar name, Stacey, bumper cars. It seems,
oh, yeah.
Yes, bumper cars. Makes sense that you would use them to bump into the other bumper cars. That's how I remember them. Well, not so anymore at one resort in the United Kingdom, which has banned bumping for fear of being sued since the cars don't have airbags.
You're kidding me.
I know. Yeah. Who knew that bumper cars weren't equipped with, side airbags and all that. But the resort says riders can have just as much fun trying to dodge other people instead of actually running into them.
That is not as much fun.
In fact, it's calling its bumper cars Dodge-ems.
Oh, so terrible. It's a terrible idea.
Taking the fun out of bumper cars.
I know. I thought the U.S. was bad with our litigious society, but apparently I think the U.K. is taking the cake today.
Well, there you go. I guess I won't be going to the royal wedding after all. In Los Angeles.
There goes our invite.
I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.